Well, good morning to each one of you. It's good to be back here again with you. It's been a number of weeks. I think we were on the schedule to come in early July, and we've had quite a bit of company this summer, and this is about the first that it's suited us. So it's good to be here, and I enjoyed the devotional this morning and the Sunday school time, and it's been an uplifting service so far. Title for our message this morning is Developing a Taste for God in Our Children. Developing a Taste for God in Our Children. The most powerful member of your body is covered with taste buds. Now, it would not be becoming this morning to attempt an inspection. You can do that later on today in front of the mirror, maybe when you're brushing your teeth tonight, but your tongue hosts anywhere from 2 to 10,000 taste buds. Now, it's not the same for everybody. You might have 5,000, I might have 3,000, the next person might have 10,000. It can vary. Not everybody has the same amount. And your taste buds aren't all on your tongue. I thought they were. But apparently they can be on the roof of your mouth, they can be back in your esophagus, they can be scattered throughout your mouth. Each taste bud has 50 to 100 receptor cells. And out of each one of these cells is a tiny hair. So if you would put your tongue under a microscope, you would probably see it's kind of furry. Because there's actually just little hairs sticking out. And these little hairs evaluate the saliva, the food that comes into your mouth, and it sends a message to your brain as to whether or not this food is safe to eat, whether you should spit it out, or whether it's safe to swallow. That's what the taste buds do. Apparently, taste buds only live for 10 to 14 days. And then they die, and you get new ones. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And the older you get, the less taste buds you have because they simply don't keep growing back like they used to. That's why as you age, your taste isn't as good. Your sense of smell and taste work together. If you have a stuffed up nose, it's pretty hard to taste your food. Or if you have COVID, the taste buds don't work. Now, I suppose it's possible for something to smell bad and taste good. I have never eaten Limburger cheese, but the smell of it is pretty awful. But some people think it tastes good, so I'm not sure how that works. Well, our sense of taste is a gift from God. It makes life enjoyable. I can't imagine not being able to taste a butter tart or a steak covered with onions and mushrooms or a maraschino cherry. I can't imagine not being able to taste that. It's a gift that God has given. Some tastes are developed. I remember as a boy, I didn't like olives, but my mom liked olives, and she would eat them occasionally, and I kind of wanted to be brave and try them. And now today, if there's olives at the fellowship dinner, you will probably see a pile on my plate. I have developed a taste for olives. Psalm 34, verse 8 says, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good." And that's the aim of our message this morning. How can we, as parents, develop within our children a taste for God? Because they don't naturally come with that taste. 1 Peter 2, verse 3 says, "If so be ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious." Have you tasted that this morning? Psalm 119, 103, "How sweet are thy words unto my taste, yea, sweeter than honey to my mouth." Helping our children develop a taste for God is critical. It's imperative for their eternal happiness, for their eternal destiny. And I'd like to take the message from Ephesians chapter 6 this morning. You can turn your Bibles there. We got some familiar verses here, verses that we often just kind of skim over and say, well, we We've known the truth that lays there for a long time and maybe don't dig into them real deep. I'd like to just draw some thoughts from these verses here this morning. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 to 10. Children, it says, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long upon the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and singleness of heart, as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will, doing service as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Now, it's no coincidence, if we would have read chapter 5, it's no coincidence that the chapter prior to this gives some pretty practical instruction on husband and wife relationships, on what a God-honoring Christian marriage is supposed to look like. And maybe we should have began there today, but our children's taste for God, I believe, starts and is developed by what they see in the relationship between mom and dad. And I think that's the challenge I would like to leave with us this morning as parents. Is your marriage an illustration of Christ's sacrificial love? Do our children see kindness, unselfishness, sacrifice, gentleness, and patience in their parents? Do they see their daddy give their mom a hug? When he's leaving the house, or when he comes home, or maybe just for no reason at all. I think they need to see that. I think they need to see outward expressions of love. Do they see mom give dad a compliment? Do they see her build him up? Do they see her look up into his face with admiration? If you look at the last verse of chapter 5, where it says, let the wife see that she reverence her husband, that word means that she looks up to him with awe and with admiration. Do your children see that? If they're not seeing those things, it's going to be a big hindrance in them being able to develop a taste for God. I'd like to look at 4 points in this message. First one is seed selection, and it has to do with directing and introducing our children to God. The second one is skin protection, which is disciplining and discipling our children for God. The third one is stem connection, which is being dedicated to connecting our children with God. And the fourth point is sweet reflection, developing character that reflects God's character. Now, I'm not sure if we're going to get through all of this morning or not. You'll understand these points just a little further on. Here in Ephesians 6, verse 4, God gives fathers the responsibility to bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And of course, we understand that both parents are needed. Both parents are involved in this. It is possible for it to be done without one or the other. That does happen in life. It is the father's responsibility to lead out, to make sure it happens. That responsibility is given to dad. I believe that a passive dad produces a domineering mom, and that leads to frustrated children. Where that's going on in a home, where there's a passive dad and a domineering mom, it's going to greatly affect the kind of taste that our children are going to develop for God. We have the word here, bring up. And that means to rear up to maturity. It means to cherish. It means to train. It does not mean to yell them up from your lazy boy. It does not mean to threaten them up with your deep bass voice. It does not mean to beat them up with a heavy fist. It does not mean to show them up with a belittling spirit, with an intimidating spirit. I know of a father that seemed to be his weakness. He was wonderful at being sarcastic. And I think it has affected every one of his children. Don't be sarcastic with your children. Bring them up alongside you. You know, when you're driving on the highway, when you're relaxing at the end of a hot summer day, when you're working in the barn or in the field or on the job, bring them along with you. Bring them up, it says. And then nurture has the idea of educating or training, has the idea of disciplinary action. It takes a lot longer to show your children how than to simply do it yourself. I remember all the things that I broke as a boy. One of the first memories I had was driving the lawnmower. And there was a school bus out on the road. We lived on the corner of a highway and the side road, and the school bus would come around the corner, and I was out driving the lawnmower, and I wanted to be sure that the people in the bus were watching. And you know what happened? I drove right into a big rock. I don't know if they saw or not. Probably they did. Anyway, I remember all the things I broke. Yes, the plow wheel. My dad was frustrated that day. He had told me how to drive the plow, and I turned the wrong way. I turned too short, and the back wheel broke off. Well, it takes a lot longer to fix something than to wreck it, doesn't it? Well, my boys break things, and you know what? Their dad still does, too. Forget that. And it talks about the word, it talks about admonition here, and that means to call to attention. It has the idea of a mild rebuke or warning. I wonder if you kept track, parents, how many warnings you've given to your children over the years. If they're teenagers today, how many warnings have they gotten? How many more warnings will they get? Well, that's part of being a parent. I mean, we need to trust them. We need to let go, but you know what? Drive carefully. Watch your speed. Don't get home too late. Be careful. The other day we were driving home from the job site, and I was driving. We take turns driving, and sometimes I drive, sometimes the boys drive, but it was my turn to drive, and we were coming up through Tabor, and I was a little bit distracted, and one of the boys was in the passenger seat, and they said, "Watch out, Dad!" And I looked, and we just got around the car. There was somebody that had put their left signal on, and they were turning, and I just about ran into them. Well, thankfully, there's no new dead dent in the truck. Proverbs 22, verse 6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he was old, he will not depart from it." The word train is the Hebrew word shanak, which, according to its usage in ancient times, had four distinct meanings. First, shanak meant to dedicate. And the idea of dedicating is something that was used at the time of inauguration or coronation when somebody was dedicated to the service of God. Shanak train was used there. Secondly, another idea of shanak was to throttle or to make narrow or to discipline. We're talking here about train. Just like in Arabic, which is a sister language to Hebrew, that word has the idea of putting a rope. I guess back in the old times, they didn't maybe use a steel bit. They would put a rope in the horse's mouth, maybe a little like a hackamore today. But the idea of training or narrowing or disciplining that horse. The third idea of shanak was that of instruction. Its fundamental meaning is meant to initiate or to start, to introduce someone to something. And then the fourth idea was to create an appetite. And the word actually meant palate, which is the roof of the mouth. And related to this idea was the practice of an Arabic midwife putting olive oil or date oil on the roof of an infant's mouth to create an appetite, to get them to suck. So how do we develop in our children a taste for God. Now, I brought an apple along this morning. Just a simple apple. We got a knife in here. It's a pretty nice apple. I would enjoy eating that one. I did have an apple already today. And we're just going to cut this apple open. And what are we going to find in the middle? What are we going to find? In the center of the apple. In there. Right in the middle. Okay. These apple seeds right in the core. So our first point is seed selection, directing or introducing our children to God. Remember, one of the definitions for train was to initiate, to start, to introduce someone to something. There's some interesting facts about these little apple seeds. And there's probably, from what I understand, 5 to 12 apple seeds inside. They call these carpels, these little pods that the seeds are in. These are pretty small little seeds. I can hardly hold them up, but there it is, right in my finger. Apple seeds contain, you probably know this, but they contain cyanide, which is a chemical. It's the same kind of chemical that Hitler used in the gas chambers when he was gassing the Jews. If you would eat enough of them, I suppose they could harm you. I think you'd have to eat a couple thousand of these apple seeds in order for them to really, really do any harm, at least a couple hundred. Okay, but they have this chemical on them called cyanide. And that chemical is on there to protect them from rot or from disease. Another interesting fact I found was with these seeds, if you would plant them and it would grow an apple tree, it's highly likely, they say 9 times out of 10, if you take a seed from an apple, plant it, and it produces a tree, and the apples it produces are bitter. They're not sweet. The only way, in most cases, to get edible apples is for there to be a graft, okay? They have to graft them into another type or another brand of apple tree for it to produce sweet enough apples that you can eat. And I thought, well, there's a nice lesson. There's a good lesson in that for us this morning. You know, with our children, the only way, I mean, we can do all things right, but the only way that there's going to be the end result, the end product that we're looking for is if they're grafted into the true vine, and that's what we want to look at this morning, is how that is done. We know that our children come with with seeds already planted in their lives, just like a garden. I mean, if you don't do anything with it, if you don't plant anything with it, there's going to be something that's going to grow. What's going to grow if you don't plant anything in your garden? What's going to grow? If you don't plant anything, will anything grow? What about weeds? You have to plant weeds? You plant your garden nice and then go around and sprinkle a bunch of weed seeds so that the weeds come so you have something to do? Oh, the weeds will grow without any effort. And that's how it is in all of our lives. And that's how it is in our children's lives. As sweet as what they are when they come into this world, they come preceded. And that is with the seeds of sin. And that's what part of the training process is to help them deal with that. So what are some seeds that parents must plant in their young children's hearts that will introduce them to God? Well, the first one is to teach them to heed. The heed seed, not the weed seed, but the heed seed. You notice in verse 1 it says, children, obey. Now, that is a direct command given to children, but it is understood that dad and mom need to teach them to heed because they don't come knowing that, all right? Children, obey. Now, obey is simply doing what we're told, not what we would like to do, okay? It's somebody else giving us command or an instruction and following that. So how important is this siege? How important is obedience? Is obedience important? Of course it is. How important is it to God? It's very important. I mean, if we don't obey His commandments, we don't get to heaven. It's that simple. Children, that one other thing I want to say is happiness and success in life comes from being able to obey joyfully, even when we don't understand or when we don't feel like it. And that is the goal in obedience. It's not just compliance, but joyful obedience. And I think some of these verses, if we get that far, we're going to look at that. The kind of obedience, the kind of, it talks here about doing goodwill from the heart. That's the kind of obedience that we're looking for. Children that are taught to obey are happy, secure children. And I wonder, I have my ideas. I don't think I'm wrong, but I wonder if a lot of the disorders that you're seeing in society today, yes, it could be affected with diet. It could be affected with all the chemicals in our food. But I think, by and large, it is affected more by the permissive culture that we live in. Just a lack of discipline, a lack of expecting obedience. And I think if that could be straight, a lot of the other disorders would go away. You know, you don't damage a child's creativity when you teach them to obey. In fact, you enhance it. You know, there's this idea out here that is out there today that if you narrow a child's way and you make them obey and you insist on it and you discipline for them, you're gonna damage their creativity. That's not true. When you free them from the selfishness of their own will, you enhance their creativity. You really do. Teach them that no means no, and don't get tired of saying no. Don't say no all the time. But it's line upon line. And yeah, it might feel like some days all you say is no. Teach them why you're saying no, but don't get tired of teaching them. Teach them to be still. Teach them to sit still. Teach them to play quietly. Teach them to come when you say come. Teach them that church is a place to sit still on the bench. I don't think that parents should need to do a lot of training actually at church. I'm not saying there isn't a place for it. And I'm not saying there isn't a time in a child's life that you need to take them out and discipline them. But by and large, I think that most of the training should be done at home. Perhaps it needs to be reinforced at church. And I commend you, children, this morning. You are sitting very, very well. You're listening. You're taking notes. That's wonderful. And I'm not saying this morning because I feel like you're a bunch of unbehaved, undisciplined children. I'm just rather encouraging us as parents to keep that in focus. I know of a parent that had their children practice sitting still at home on the couch during the week. From what I understand, they would sit there for maybe an hour and just quietly sit there on the couch looking at books. And the mom made them do that to help them prepare to sit in church. It's part of the training, part of the discipline. We talked a little about joyful, willing obedience, not grudgingly. Verse 7 talks about that. We'll maybe get to that later. Dear parents, our attitude, our spirit, so greatly impacts the atmosphere of our home and our children's attitude. And I mean, you get a parent, you get a person that's negative and critical, and that's going to rub off on your child. But the opposite is also true. If you have a parent that's positive, that looks for the good in life, that is quick to point out the blessings of God and the wonders of answered prayer. I enjoyed the devotional this morning and how God is still answering prayer, and parents, point those things out to your children. Live life with that kind of a mentality. I like the story of Muhammad's horses. I don't know how many of you have ever heard of it, but I think it's a legend. But Muhammad supposedly had five favorite mares from which all the bloodlines of the Arabian horses came from. And supposedly these five favorite mares were chosen through this occasion. It was happened after a long journey through the hot burning desert. Muhammad and his herd of horses arrived at an oasis. They had been going through the hot desert for a long time. Everybody was burning up with thirst. And he turned them loose to run to the water to get a drink. And as he turned them loose, he blew his bugle. Now, these horses were trained that when Muhammad blew his bugle, they were supposed to come to him immediately. Well, most of the horses were so thirsty, they kept running. But there was five of them. In spite of their thirst, they turned around and they came back to their master. And those were the horses that Muhammad chose to carry the bloodlines, because they were horses that put their own desires, put the desires of their master ahead of their own desires. And that's the kind of obedience that we're aiming for. That's the kind of obedience that God wants to see in his children. The second thing, second seed that we must plant, is we must teach our children to honor. It says that here in verse 2, honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long in the earth. The seed of honor. And I believe there's more seeds that we could talk about this morning, but I think the two that we're talking about are the most important. If you get children to heed, if you get them to train that they will obey willingly and not grudgingly, but joyfully, and if you teach them to honor God, you as parents, and others, you get those two basic concepts, and I believe the rest will fall into place. You know, when you honor someone, you value them. You show reverence to them. And you count them as a prize or an asset in your life. There's a lot of disrespect out there today for authority in general, for authority in the home, for mom's dad's authority. There's not much honor. And I believe that has affected, has been something that has affected and will continue to rot society from the core. Again, like we talked about back in verse 33 of chapter 5, a wife is commanded to reverence her husband, to honor her husband, to build him up. You know, don't criticize, don't mock, don't belittle your husband in front of your children. I think even for parents to correct each other, to have a lot of that going on in front of your children, I think is undermining the honor that's supposed to be there. I know of a couple that does that. I mean, she'll say something and then he'll correct her. You know, everybody's sitting there. You can almost be sure that, no, it's not that way. It's this way. Oh, okay. It's like, you poor people, don't live that way. That's not honor. Okay, if there's something to, there's times my wife needs to set me straight. Actually, it happens quite a bit, but she doesn't do it in front of the children or in front of other people. Okay? Sort out your disagreements and your frustrations in private. Don't be a Barristan Bear mom. You know the Barristan Bear stories where the poor daddy's always the poor loser? That's not the kind of culture that we're trying to promote here. 1 Peter 3:7 tells husbands to give honor unto your wife. Treat her with dignity. Treat her as something precious and valuable. Don't shame her or subtly make her the scapegoat for your shortcomings. You know, our children learn so much about honoring others by what they observe in their parents. Teach your children to get along with others. Teach your children to honor others. Don't allow bullying or pushing. Teach them the lessons of giving up what they want for the benefit of someone else. I remember as a boy, it was before I was in school. I might have been 3 or 4. Anybody here 4 this morning? five. I might have been five. I was probably four because I wasn't in school yet. And my mom and I and my cousin and his mom went to the secondhand store. And there was a beautiful red fire truck at the secondhand store that day. And you know what? Michael and Dennis both wanted that fire truck. And how were we going to decide who gets it? He wanted it, and I wanted it. I don't remember how the moms decided, but I remember that I got the fire truck. But you know what? I also remember that I wasn't really happy. And the reason I wasn't really happy is because my selfishness made someone else unhappy. And I think that is a lesson that we need to instill into our children. If me getting what I want makes someone else unhappy, it shouldn't bring me happiness. I mean, sometimes it's inevitable. Somebody had to get the truck or else we had to leave it there. But teaching our children the value of honor, the value of giving up what they want and finding happiness in that for the sake of someone else. Teach them to honor everyone, not just those who are popular. It seems that the girl genes have an extra, I don't know, tendency to special friends and little cliques. And these things happen in life. They happen in school. They happen when they even get older. And mothers, you need to be wise to those games and be careful that you do all you can to help your daughters learn not to live life that way. Because in the end, ultimately, someone is dishonored. Someone is not prized or valued the way God wants them to be. Plant seeds of honor for authority. And I know that this can be very difficult, especially if authority has stepped out from underneath God's chain of authority. But, you know, even in relation to our prime minister, there's a lot of things that probably we would do different if we were prime minister. What's our attitude? What's our spirit? Our children will pick up on that. I think 1 Peter 2, verse 17 has very good advice. It says, honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. And I think if we got those four things straight, it'll help to produce a heart in our children that hungers after God. All right, the second thing is skin protection, disciplining, and discipling our children for God. Now, you notice that this apple has a skin on it, a nice red skin. It probably has even some wax on that skin to keep it nice for shipping and storage purposes. How many of you peel your apple before you eat? Eat your apple peeled or eat it with the skin on? Well, I like to eat it with the skin on. I didn't always, but now I do, because there are a lot of valuable things in this apple's skin. In fact, most of the healthy things that are in the apple, the majority of them, are in the skin, okay? Now, if this apple didn't have the skin on it, you think we'd feel like eating it? I got this apple at Costco. So it was probably grown in, I don't know, but it's Mexico or China or California or where it came from. But do you think this apple would look this good if it wouldn't have had a skin on it? Obviously not. The skin is what protects it. Apparently this peeling is rich in vitamin A, C, and K. It also has essential minerals such as potassium, phosphorus, and calcium. All things that your body needs are in the skin. Not just in the meat of the apple, but in the actual skin. The fiber of an apple is very healthy and aids in maintaining your liver and bone health. So an apple a day keeps the doctor away. That is true. Loving discipline for our children is as critical as the skin is to this apple. Now, there's plethora of live demonstrations all around us of what happens when you throw the skin away in relation to training your children. Remember, the one meaning of train was, the Hebrew word shanach was to throttle or to make narrow, to discipline. Discipline is the practice and method of teaching and enforcing acceptable patterns of behavior. Now, your truck, your tractor will have a throttle on it. And that throttle simply regulates the amount of fuel that goes to the engine. Can you imagine trying to drive your truck or your car or your tractor without a throttle? It was just wide open all the time. You come to a stoplight, and everybody's truck is just running wide open, pedal to the metal. Imagine how that would be. Imagine how it would be trying to take off with it that way. The throttle is what regulates it. It's what makes it, it's what controls it. It's what makes it possible for you to drive in a safe manner. As parents this morning, we are like our children's throttle, okay? We help to regulate and enforce acceptable patterns of behavior. And where this is not done, a child will destroy themselves. You know, it starts when they're small. I enjoy watching our son and daughter-in-law with their little child, and it brings back memories. But she's a pretty wise mom. From a baby, she didn't let that little baby just do whatever Theodore wanted to do. She would wrap him in a blanket, and she would hold him tight. And you know what? She is training him. She's teaching him some valuable lessons. He can't just flail and cry and do whatever he wants to do. No, he's restrained. He's disciplined. And it starts when they're that small. And it brings him security. He actually likes that. She doesn't do that all the time. There's times where she lets him lay on the living room floor and kick and do whatever he wants. But many times she'll just restrain him and hold him close. She's throttling him, okay? She's regulating him. She's regulating his behavior. I even remember with our babies, my wife would train them to have a scheduled feeding time. And there was some controversy around this idea, and I'm not here just saying it will work in every case and in every time, but I believe it's up to parents as to who is going to be boss. Is it going to be your child or is it going to be you? And it's best, it's happiest when it's the right way around. And in many cases, you don't have to see every hour of the night. Sometimes, depending if a child's colicky or whatever, you may need to. But many times, that child, as a young child, can be trained to be scheduled. Anyway, you'd say, well, preacher, you don't understand my situation. You don't know what you're talking about. I got a little bit of experience. I don't have all the experience there is to have. I'm just throwing that out there. Training has the idea of making narrow. It has the idea of setting parameters. A child needs and craves that security. You know, don't let them have all the sugar they can eat. Of course, you know that as parents, but they go to a picnic or a family gathering, and there's a candy scramble, and they come home with this big bag of candy. You've got a wild little weasel if you let them have that all in the next couple of days. But, you know, take it from them and say, you know what, Mommy, Daddy's going to give you one candy a day, okay? Because children don't know how to control that. They need somebody to do that for them. Set perimeters. Set boundaries. Boundaries that they understand. We had a tree or a fence post on the driveway that they couldn't go past. They were riding their bike. That tree's the line. You go further than that, you're out of boundaries, and there'll be consequences. And that isn't just to be a mean mom or dad. That is for their own good and for their own safety. Maybe it's a gear or a speed on the ATV. Recently, there was a boy in our community that he was driving his ATV, and it tipped over, and he could have been hurt really bad. And the mom said, well, they got a new ATV, and it's the kind that doesn't have the gear anymore. They used to have a rule that they could just drive in second gear. Well, this new ATV didn't have that, but what I'm saying is set parameters for their safety as little children. And as they grow, set parameters for their safety. The time will come that you need to do that less and less, but don't be afraid to do it. All right. Teach them to make their bed. Teach them to be neat. I listened to a speech by, I believe it was a military general, that he was giving some kind of a powwow speech. And anyway, he stressed the importance of making your bed and how important that is, how fundamental that is to success in the rest of life is making your bed every morning. You get that done, you get that done right, and it's a good premise to start your day from. And I think he's right. It's a small thing, but that's what life is. It's just a compilation of small things, just doing small things right. You see, God has boundaries. God has parameters for his children and for their happiness and security. And that's the goal. As their children grow and as they make that choice, that connection with God, that boundaries, parameters, discipline is not a new idea to them, because God operates on the same principle. Now a little on law enforcement. And we all know that words are cheap. And in the end, if there's no action, it's actually worse. Proverbs 13:24, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, he that loveth him chasteneth at the times. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Proverbs 23:13-14, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. You see the connection? You see the connection between the present and eternity? I remember some of the spankings I received. Did you know I got spankings? Yes, I did. Mom used a ping pong paddle, and Dad used his hand. And it was a strong, calloused hand. Mom's spankings felt like a mosquito bite. Dad's were very dreaded. They were hard, and they hurt. I'd say more like a hornet sting. Something you felt for a while. And I would say, as a father, I pretty much followed my dad's method. I'm not going to go into discussion this morning what the kind of tool you use for discipline. Some people feel it's not right to use the hand. They should use a rod or a stick. Like I said, I'm not going into that. I think the important thing is that it happens, that you get it done, and you get it done in the right way. Make sure you're not angry or frustrated. That'll that'll be counterproductive and produce bitterness in the child. And make sure it hurts. When you spank, make sure it hurts. Don't spank through the diaper. I've seen parents that just kind of whap and slap their children around. And at the end of the day, I think it's actually worse than not at all. The spanking takes time. The child needs to understand why they're being disciplined. Make sure you take the time that they do understand that. Make sure your spirit is in control. And then take the time that it takes to do the job right. But it should be something that they feel. Find a private space. Be in control of the situation. If there's kicking and screaming and wailing and flailing, you're not done. I used to tell my children that I think all children are the same. And I said, I'm not going to stop until you hold still. And it usually worked. They knew that, all right, if I hold still, this will soon be done. If I don't, it's going to take a while. The discipline should last long enough until you feel them give up. And then stop. Give them a hug and enjoy the precious gift of a free child. Now, our children must make the connection that disobedience has consequences and brings them pain, not only in the physical, but it will in the spiritual as well. I mean, when we go against God's commandments, when we disobey God, it has consequences, and ultimately it brings serious pain. And that is the concept that we're trying to instill in our children. Now, the opposite is also necessary. When our children do well, commend them, bless them, build them up, compliment them, make sure they feel your approval. A child that is never sure if they have mom or dad's approval is an insecure child. And I believe it will affect how they look at God and how they feel about their relationship with God. Just never being able to get that approval. Make sure you reinforce approval as well. Be careful with the world's ideas about therapy. You know, there's a place for reward-induced behavior, I believe. There's other methods of discipline other than corporal punishment that have their place, but be careful with their ideas about therapy. And I'm not going into all of that either. But I believe that if we require honor and obedience from our children, the rest will fall into place. One other thing, verse 9 talks about forbearing, threatening, and it's in the context of business, but it is also in the context of authority. And I think as fathers, as mothers, it's very important that we forbear threatening. Mean what you say. Don't bargain. Don't yell. Don't use sarcasm. Don't make a threat that you don't plan to carry out. That's really what a threat is. It's something, it's a consequence that you say is going to happen, but you never have the intention of carrying it out. And that's actually lying. At the end of the day, that's actually what it is. And it's using an authority in a manner, in a way that God did not intend for it to be used. And it gives our children a wrong concept of authority. So forbear threatening. You know, our children shouldn't know that once mom's voice is at a certain decibel, then it's time to take heed. That's confusing. Correct thy son, he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall bring delight unto thy soul. What time are we supposed to stop? We've got a couple more points here. Well, these next two shouldn't take too long. The third one is stem connection, and this is being dedicated to connecting our children with God. Verse 4 here talks about bringing them up. You will see on this apple, it's got this little stem. It's not very big, but this stem was strong enough that it held this heavy, big apple to the branch of the tree until it was ripe, until it was picked. Just this little stem. It's not much bigger than a thread. This stem also brought all the nutrients into this apple, brought the life into this apple from the tree. Its connection to the branch, just this little stem here at the top. Stem connection. Bring them up. When you bring someone along with you, you accompany them, you carry them, you go along with them, and you bring them along with you. And bring also has the idea of attracting someone or something to yourself. You know, the smell of fresh bread will attract the man into the house. It'll bring him in. Sooner or later, it'll bring him in. Now, Deuteronomy 6, verse 7 says, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Now, this word diligently here in Deuteronomy 6, verse 7, it means to whet, it means to sharpen, it means to drill into, it means to impress upon. It has the idea of instilling or fixing something firmly into someone's mind. And it's done through repetition. Now, the Jews and the Muslims, they know how to do this. Did you know that Jewish boys, traditional Jewish boys, by the age of 10, they have memorized the first 5 books of the Torah, which is the first 5 books of the Old Testament. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Can you imagine if you went to school and your teacher said, our memory work for this year is going to be the book of Genesis. Next year, our memory work for this year is going to be the book of Exodus. And so on, all the way up until you got to grade 5, you would have learned all the first 5 books of the Old Testament. You would say, wow, that's a pretty tough teacher. But that's what they do. And they are instilling the Word of God into their children's minds. Do it diligently. You know, I know there can be too much memory work, there can be too much homework, but I think we err on the side of being just a little too passive, just a little too lazy. Be careful, parents, that you don't get too owly when you think your children have to learn a little too much memory work. The discipline is good for them. And yes, it can be overdone, but I think in many cases it's underdone. You know, the picture that I get from this verse is we work with pressure-treated lumber, and often this lumber is in sights, okay? They take the boards, and they run it through this machine, and it cuts a bunch of little grooves into the boards. And then they run it through the treating solution, and the reason they put those grooves in is so that treating solution gets right into the wood, okay? So that the wood doesn't rot. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get that truth permeated and into our children's hearts. They develop a taste for God in our children. We must be connected to God himself, ourselves. Do your children see the Heavenly Father in your life? Do they see his loving kindness, his mercy, his care, his patience, his gentleness? Are they seeing that in your life? Is what is coming from my life something that they will want, something that they will embrace when they come to that point in their lives? You see, the same ingredients that connect us in our relationship with God are what connect us to our children and what will show the Father to them. Stem connection. You know, love is expressed in many ways. Often, it's shown by sacrificing time, right? I remember my dad, he was a busy farmer. He worked hard. He went through the early 80s when interest rates were 21%. He was raising a family, trying to farm. But he took time for us. And one of the things I remember, I was just a young boy. I might have been 7 or 8. And one day he decided we're going to build a kite. So he found some old used 2x4s and some fertilizer bags. And he built this kite, tied these fertilizer bags onto the string for the tail, and we took that thing out to the field, and we tried to see if it would fly. We tried pretty hard, and it didn't fly. But that wasn't the point. I remember that he took the time to build a kite with his children. And time is the best investment we can make in our families because it creates a connection. It creates a relationship. Now, he took us fishing. Back at the old steel bridge, we would dig up worms, and we had old fishing rods that hardly cranked right, but we would catch chub, and we'd catch redfin. It was time together. Disciplining them takes time. Listening to their woes and heartaches takes time. Drawing our teenagers out takes time. I say it takes, I've told you this before, but it takes more time when you're raising teenagers than what it does when you're raising small children. It takes more time. Do your children see you have time for God? When they get up in the morning, do they see mom and dad reading their Bibles? Do they see you praying quietly in your chair in the corner? How important is your God time? Your children know. They pick up on that. They can see that. We're talking here about establishing a connection. Does your enthusiasm rub off on them for church life, for serving in church? You know, being part of a small church is a wonderful thing. And one of the wonderful things about it is that it gives opportunity for the young men and ladies to serve in the church. And you know, the first couple of number of times they get up there and they have devotions and they're awkward and it's maybe short. That's okay. That's okay. But it's important And it's something that we should promote and be enthused about. You know, Abraham, he brought Lot along with him. Noah brought his sons along into the ark. Timothy embraced the faith of his mother and grandmother because there was a connection there. There was something he saw that he wanted. Well, the last point is sweet reflection, developing character that reflects God's character. You know, the reason we eat apples is not just for, some people eat the whole apple, maybe you do, maybe you eat the core and the seeds and the skin and everything, but it's the sweet flesh of the apple that we're after. And that, at the end of the day, is what our goal is as parents, is to produce character, at least to help in the character-producing process that reflects God's character, that they may see your Father which is in heaven and may glorify him. However, they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. You know, verses 5 through 7 here, they talk about attitudes. It talks about in singleness of heart unto Christ, as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. Verse 7 talks with goodwill, doing service as unto the Lord and not unto men. And you notice that all these verses have to do with the heart and mind. And they're all related to the character and the attitude of a person. Now, this is talking about employees. This is talking about what we're expecting once they're 16, 17, 20, 30 years of age. But the foundation, the basis for this starts when they're little. It's the part that gives back. It's a part, the part that is an asset to society and to the kingdom of God. Now, as you as parents develop a taste for God in your children, our goal is that they will begin to love that taste. You remember how the midwife puts the olive oil on the roof of the baby's mouth? It's starting to develop a taste. And as our children start to develop that taste on their own, and as they start to make choices and give their hearts to the Lord and make that connection with him themselves, and as we back out of the picture, that we're going to see some of the qualities that are mentioned here. That they'll have a single heart, a sincere heart, a heart without dissimulation or self-seeking, a heart that is generous and liberal in its desires to serve. That they'll be ready and willing to be a servant, a slave for God, doing the will of God from the heart and happy to do it. You know, not a half-hearted, can't wait till 5 o'clock, can't wait till weekend kind of a Christian. That's not what we're trying to produce, is it? We're trying to produce someone that's all in 100%. A person with goodwill, well-minded, positive attitude. Has the idea of being euphemistic. Euphemistic means softened, polite, agreeable. Not a hard-hearted, smart-aleck, know-it-all, but someone that can take correction and direction without getting offended. That process starts when they're little, and it carries right on in to their adult life. Character that is sincere and honest. Character that serves with a smile and a spring in its step. Character that can sing when it's raining. Character that shines out in a selfish, sinful, dark world. Character that reflects the Father's character. It's what we as fathers and mothers are still developing ourselves. You know, in all of this, as we're training our children, we're still developing, we're still learning ourselves. It's the work of a lifetime, and as God develops the sweetness of his character in us, may we be his servants in helping set the stage so that he can develop his character in our precious children. We're going to ask our song leader to lead us in a closing song here as soon as I get. I think I got my song.